We're told to care more, care about everyone, everything, all the time. But here's what no one tells you. Caring done the wrong way can actually quietly break you. It turns into overwhelm, exhaustion, resentment, that heavy feeling of giving and giving until there's nothing left. Today's guest, a Harvard and MIT-trained neuroscientist, says that the answer isn't to care less. It's to care better, to care continuously. And when you learn how caring stops draining you and starts strengthening you, this is a conversation that could generally change how you show up for everyone in your life, including yourself. Now, it is a true honor to welcome my guest today. Tony Natter is a neuroscientist and a physician trained at Harvard Medical School and MIT, where he earned his PhD in brain and cognitive sciences. He is a New York Times bestselling author, a globally recognized expert on consciousness and human development, and he is the head of the meditation organizations worldwide as his successor to Yogi. And his new book, The Power of Caring, explores one of the most human experiences of all and reveals how to make it a source of strength rather than exhaustion. Dr. Natter, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. I am so happy to have you here.
Thank you. It's my joy to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Now, your book opens with a phrase that we usually say with a shrug, who cares? And you usually turn it into one of the most important questions we can ask. What made you want to explore care in itself?
You know, I have spent decades watching people care imperfectly, including myself, and I wanted to offer something that might help. I have watched doctors burn out. I have watched parents become exhausted by love even. I have watched activists become bitter because the world did not change as fast as they cared about it changing. I have also watched people withdraw from caring altogether into indifference or cynicism because caring hurt them too much. I have watched in many different cultures and contexts the rarer human being who has found a way to care, you know, I would say sustainably, to give decade after decade, without depleting. And the difference between those two kinds of caring, those two groups, I came to understand was not how much they care, it was what they cared, you know, how they cared. It was what they were caring from. The exhausted ones cared from anxiety, from urgency, from the constant pressure to fix everything. The sustainable ones cared from a settled inner ground that was being constantly replenished. And that distinction is the heart of the book, I would say. I wanted to put it down, you know, clearly, drawing on what I have learned from medicine, neuroscience, the philosophy of consciousness, ancient traditions, the Vedic tradition, contemplative traditions, meditation, as well as from my own life. You know, the world has plenty of people who care, of course. What it needs is caring that lasts, as you beautifully presented, caring that nourishes the person doing it instead of depleting them.
Yes.
You know, there were different specific aspects which also made me write the book. We can go through them if you like.
I'd love to.
I would say, like, first, when I looked at it and studied it, even from neuroscience and physiology, you know, I found that caring is wired into us. But many of us have lost the way to care wisely and sustainably, as we just said. As we said, also, some people care too much and become exhausted. Some care too little and gradually become indifferent or isolated and lonely. And there is today a special something, what I would call a new generational gap that has appeared in young people exposed to a volume of suffering, really, that no prior generation has had to absorb or to see. And they were asking, why should I care if no one else seems to be?
Yeah.
If maybe the universe doesn't seem to be caring.
Right.
And so there is this loneliness that we see in the young generation. And therefore, they turn onto themselves. And so I think this is a very important aspect where they expect to be cared for, which is important, but they don't see it happen.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that actually caring itself is a way to improve one's sense of self and overcome loneliness. And this is, you know, something important also. And most importantly, I think what I call conscious caring is a technique itself, a learnable practice that accompanies self-development and leads to a more fulfilling and actually connected life.
Yes.
So conscious caring is, in the end, an art of living.
Yes.
For, you know, what philosophers like Aristotle and others used to call eudaimonia, which is the flourishing, deep, yes, lasting fulfillment that comes from a purposeful, consciously lived life rather than from impulse, stress, you know, driven obligations or simple performance.
I love that. I love that. And why do you believe that this is, you know, this one thing, how we, you know, how and what we care about might be the starting point for better, more fulfilling life?
It's because it expands the sense of self. And in the book, I present a worldview, which is not necessarily for anyone to actually accept, but to look into, that actually consciousness is primary, awareness is primary, and that it's one field of consciousness that manifests as different entities, different aspects of life, and that ultimately, caring for anyone is also caring for oneself.
Yes.
We are wired to care already. So when you care, you know, you have oxytocin that gets released, which is the bonding hormone. You have dopamine that gets released, which is the reward system enhancing this to happen. Serotonin gets released, which is also that of joy and happiness, endorphins.
Yeah.
And the you know, the vagus nerve, the parasympathetic system is activated. So it reduces blood pressure, heart rate improves, and the sense of self increases. So really caring for others is also caring for oneself if one does it in the right way, wisely.
Right.
And that is a healing process and get us out of our smallness. So
right.
There are many, many aspects, many, you know, I use even the power of caring. So in that sense, it has something to offer that is very fundamental.
I love that. I love that. Now, this is the part that I think so many people desperately need to hear because they are living it. So many of us care deeply and we end up overwhelmed. We end up burned out. We end up withdrawn entirely to protect ourselves. Why does caring so often lead to exhaustion instead of fulfillment?
There are three levels of why caring happens. You know, one is, as we said, we are wired to care, and that is part of the system. Our species has evolved to care for each other, and that's why we are stronger than maybe in the jungle, you know, or other species that are stronger than us.
Yes.
As individuals, we have certain energy and power, but as a group, we are much more powerful. So evolution has supported those who cared more. So there are changes in the nervous system, let's say mirror neurons, for example, that are activated when you see somebody suffering. So
right.
You actually live the suffering as if yourself, and that's where empathy, if it is not balanced, becomes exhausting because you're actually using your nervous system. You are as if yourself firing. So when you connect with others, you're firing your neurons,
yeah,
and your nervous system and your physiology get activated. And if you don't know how to handle it, it leads to overwhelm and exhaustion and even in sometimes trauma, as in PTSD, for example.
Right.
Post-traumatic stress. And so there is a system which is very useful, which is wired within us, which is very helpful. But when stress accumulates and fatigue accumulates and we don't turn into ourselves, caring for ourselves properly,
uh-huh,
then we get into this burnout.
Yeah.
The other aspect, this is the physiological, automatic kind of caring, if you like, wired,
yeah,
within us. The other thing is what we call like moral obligation, in a sense. We have learned how to do things, how should I care under this circumstance, under that circumstance, what happens here, what a good person would do under such situation.
Right.
All of this is very helpful and useful, of course, for moral action, etc. But this becomes sometimes performance. So we do it as if we are obligated to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We feel the pressure and the guilt and the fatigue from it.
Yes.
And that is, while both are important, the wire to care, the spontaneous physiological response, plus the moral obligation are important. But I differentiate these two from conscious caring. Conscious caring is when caring comes from within rather than a performance on the outside or a reflex or jumping into the fire. You know, there is a fire and you think you have to care and you run there. And so maybe you have to think who else can do it, who is trained to do it, what is the best response to do it, and to learn what is mine to care and what is not mine to care.
Mm-hmm.
And what is, you know, how to manage all of that.
Yeah.
It's based on inner settling, inner ground. So conscious caring comes from an inner settled ground where you learn how to assess the situation, assess what your capacities are, and not just respond to the loudest around who is around, but to the most interesting and most needed and most capable for you to do aspect in caring.
Yes.
So there is a lot of awakening that is needed. So we care from this inner settled state. So we care from within,
right,
rather than, you know, reflex actions or, you know, stopping to care for oneself. So that's another aspect.
Right.
Another aspect, you know, I have seen, you know, like daughters, for example, taking care of their mother who is very old, and they were old also. And sometimes the daughter actually would succumb and even, you know, pass before the mother. And that is because they think, okay, self-care is not right and there is an obligation. So self-care, you know, when your moral obligation burns you out, you will not be able to care more. And therefore, there is a self-responsibility that I awaken, you know, very deeply in the book, so that the guilt or the fear or the sense of responsibility is balanced. It's not to care less, but to care wisely.
Exactly. Well said. And what's the difference between the kind of caring that drains us and the kind of caring that actually strengthens us?
When the caring comes from a settled inner state, then we activate all of these mechanisms that help us. So we are nourished by oxytocin, by serotonin, by, you know, dopamine. There is a sense of fullness and wholeness.
Yes.
And the sense of caring for oneself, almost even while we're caring for others, even our physiology improves. So caring by itself is a healing aspect. But caring from reflex based on tiredness and stress, or from pure obligation because that's the right thing to do, can create resentment, can create a point where the cared for will feel it.
Mm-hmm.
They feel the resentment. And then this dynamics between I am trying my best and they don't appreciate and they feel also that I am not being authentic and all of that creates that dynamic where one tries to do even more and gets even more exhausted and the other, even the receiver, doesn't get much. So conscious caring, proper caring is one which enlivens the giver, strengthens the giver as much as the receiver also.
Yes.
And there are techniques how to do it, you know, how to settle down, how to think about it, maybe practice some meditation technique, take a few deep breaths. There are things that the book presents that are actually in every chapter, different techniques and methods to think through the situation one is facing and how to deal with it.
Right. Now, you said something that reframes this completely, that the goal isn't to care more, it's to care better. So what does it mean to care, you know, I guess consciously?
Yes. First is discernment. Discernment, which means, you know, you wake up in the morning and you say, what is mine to care for today? Because nowadays we are bombarded with news and overwhelmed by, you know, the world is as if, you know, all the things that are broken in the world are given to us every day through the media. Because the media encourages or has its own algorithms that support catastrophe and problems, because people, you know, adrenaline comes up and they wake up and they are, you know, the fear factor and they want to know what happens, etc. And so they think that this world problems is their problem.
Yeah.
That's particularly, you know, the younger generation who faces that, because, you know, the young generation nowadays, even in when they get there in their teens, they have been exposed to what our, you know, grandparents or even parents haven't seen in a lifetime.
Yeah.
Exposure to the world and all of that. So already there is an overwhelm. And then one feels as if one is having a demand to care about all this. So here is the difference between caring and carrying. So we carry things that are not ours to do. And the one thing to do is discernment and the ability to know what is mine to care for. What is mine today to care for? So one can even wake up in the morning and say, what is mine to do today? What is mine to care for today?
Mm-hmm.
And that discernment should be on the basis of how much can I do? What is the real need? And am I caring for myself so that I can keep the strength, the energy, the power, the happiness that allows me to give what I have?
Right.
And therefore, one thing to overcome is that sense of, you know, if your mother or somebody older in the family needs your care, and then you feel guilty to take a vacation or to go and relax and all of that. If you can do it in the context of, yes, this will help me to care better because I will be better, then already this is very important.
Yes.
The other thing which is very important is caring from within, from a settled place.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where going back to oneself, caring for oneself, putting even boundaries and knowing that boundaries are not walls. Boundaries are just a limit after which your care will not be sustainable. And so you have to say, well, I have an obligation, even if I'm totally altruistic, even if I want just to help, I know that I cannot help from a depleted level.
Yes.
I can only help if I am full. You know, if the car is your car and is helping you to drive around, when it runs out of fuel, out of petrol, it's not selfish to stop and fill it up so that it keeps helping. So you have to realize that caring comes from inside.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other things, you know, that you can do to help that. Another thing is trusting life so that you do your action and don't be attached to the result necessarily. You do the best you can, and you have to know how to let go, how to accept and trust that life will carry you and will carry your action. The other thing can be, for example, realizing that small acts of care are also very important, and they ripple, because people think, oh, it's on a big level. Even little acts of care in society and little acts of kindness here and there, opening the door, saying something nice, calling your friend, you know, one can do without being exhausted, and yet it ripples. There is, you know, what we call behavioral contagion, where we know that an act of kindness, an act of goodness towards somebody will inspire them also to act in a nice way to others.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, if we want to change society, realize that even those small acts ripple away. Every act ripples. You know, I take the example in the book of a pebble that you throw on the lake and how it creates waves. And these waves, you might never know where they go, where they reach, you know.
Yeah.
And they'll reach very far.
Yes.
So these are a few examples. I can't keep talking about
No, I love it. I love it. Now, how is it different from the way most of us go through our days?
You know, first wake up and be kind to yourself, be alert that you are the basis of caring. You are the platform.
Yes.
On which every caring will happen. And therefore, mm-hmm. that platform should be sustained, should be happy, should be strong, and take care of yourself. You know, you
yeah.
get ready, you get fresh, you dress well, you do your meditation,
mm-hmm.
which I advise very strongly. For example, transcendental meditation, which I personally practice, which has been researched extensively and has been proven to give that inner ground, that inner stability. And so you start your day by refreshing yourself, accept to be good, to look good, and to mm-hmm. dive deep within yourself. And then, you know, think of the things you have to do. What I need to do today, that is the discernment side, the
yes.
kind of planning. What is mine to care for today?
Right.
And then you start your day in a balanced way and realize that whenever you are exceeding your capacity, that you need a reset. And, you know, you can, after a day, come back in the evening, practice another maybe 20 minutes of meditation. Transcendental meditation is what I, you know, like personally.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you can do some even journaling, some planning, some reflections, take a few deep breaths. And in the day, if you find yourself in a situation where you're reacting instinctively and reflexly, take a step back, take a deep breath, you know, put your hand on your heart. There are a few things that one can do that actually help the physiology to settle and then to be in touch with ourselves, with oneself.
Yes.
Maybe we're hungry or we have, you know, we haven't drunk water or something. And sometimes this creates moods and excitation and fatigue and anger based on even some physiological levels. So
yes.
we shouldn't lose touch with our physiology, with our mind, with ourself. And
yes.
that is all about being conscious, being aware of what is going on.
Right. So true. So true. And when Karen turns into control or anxious overreach or like taking on everyone else's problems, how do we set wise love and boundaries without shutting down our compassion?
This is important because if we care from an obligation level or from a sense of controlling the other, we should realize that. And that is where caring is not anymore what I call conscious caring. See, empathy is, I could say, empathy is feeling something. Compassion is feeling and seeing and assessing. Caring is feeling, seeing, assessing, and acting on it. So there is an action that is consciously guiding the response to the situation. And if you, for example, I have a whole chapter on somebody who kept calling their son to check on them when they left for the university. And they were trying to control all their life. And the son became a bit disturbed, you know. And at the end, they came to me and I said, "What are you doing and what's going on?" and all of that. And I told them, "You are controlling too much and you have to give them a chance even to make their own mistakes."
Exactly.
And that's why they are running away, you know. Everybody has to have a chance to live their life and to do it. So there is a whole set of systems where there is attachment, and attachment, you know, I discuss from the psychological perspective.
Yeah.
Attachment that is a healthy attachment which supports, we don't deplete ourselves, we don't overwhelm the other. There is anxious attachment where we are, you know, disappointed if something doesn't happen exactly as we wanted, that we want to control the other's life, we want to see how they are
yes.
doing, and if they don't do what we expect them to be or expect them to do at the same time, we build this anxiety that drains us And so this tendency to control and, you know, not let life do its bidding, and people kind of get a chance to do mistakes, even to people we love, and accept that and nurture that, then this kind of relation leads to the sense of anxiety, and that sense of anxiety gets built in the system of caring, and it's sensed by the other, and therefore the results are not as expected.
Yeah.
Of course, there is the avoidant attachment, which is, so we have the healthy, balanced attachment, the anxious attachment, we have the avoidant attachment. And these are people who, you know, maybe have been hurt by caring and not getting the response that they expected. And they feel now, you know, they wear it like a medal that I don't care and I'm, you know, standoffish and you know, I'm like that and this. While they do care inside, of course. But then this avoidant kind of situation also leads to isolation and not a sense of true fulfillment.
Right.
So all of these values have to be balanced. We have to accept what we can do, what is ours to do, when we can do it, how we do it. And trust is important. Trust life and being set within ourselves.
Right.
So that care comes from within. And care is natural. It's natural. It's not an effort we have to do.
Right.
Care will flow when we are well established within ourselves.
Right. I love that. I love that so much. And for the listeners out there, if you're someone who gives so much of yourself to others and sometimes wonders who's left to care for you, this conversation is the reset that you've been needing. Follow The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi right now. Every week we bring you the thinkers and the teachers who help you live with more clarity, connection, and meaning. Now, your work bridges modern neuroscience and ancient wisdom in a way that very few people can. Now, in, you know, where, you know, and this is actually, I guess, where you could say it gets really profound. You describe caring as more than a personal act, that at the deepest level, it can reflect as a connection that we all share. Can you help us understand that?
Yes, you know, I have been diving deep into the mind-body problem, consciousness and physiology, which one is first, what's the relationship, why we are here. The big questions, which was in my previous book, which was called Consciousness is All There Is, that's the book that also was a New York Times bestseller that you mentioned. And there, from a neuroscience perspective, from a physics perspective, from a philosophy perspective, from many, many angles, I converged to the understanding that there is a field of consciousness that is primary and from which all, you know, emerges. So that's a long story of philosophy and analysis between idealism and physicalism, philosophy and science, etc. I don't think it's in the context of this particular discussion with you that we need to, you know, dissect it in detail. But to say in summary that actually there is a field of being and we are all belonging to that. So we are all connected. And from that field, when we care even for ourselves or for others, we are truly caring for ourselves ultimately. It's the same self that appears in different individuals, in different feelings, in different levels. And all the philosophies, you know, if you take, for example, the golden rule about, you know, do unto others what you want to be done unto yourself, or don't do unto others what you don't want to be done unto yourself.
Right.
This sounds by itself like a moral kind of guidance you should do to others, etc. But what it really says is that the other is like yourself, is yourself, in fact. The ultimate depth of this wisdom or this teaching is that we are one ultimately. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And your action ripples and it ripples and it comes back to you. So there is also, as you sow, so shall you reap. It is part of physics, action and reaction. So if you sow kindness, you'll reap balance and harmony and well-being.
Yes.
If you sow difficulties and problems, you'll get incoherence and complications and problems. So there is a connectedness. Life is not a disconnected reality. Even from physics perspective, we know that everything is connected with everything else. And therefore, even from that perspective, we are really caring for ourselves. We are first caring for the first home that we have inhabited, which is our body and our mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the home that is our family, that is our environment, that is our nations, and it is our world. And that is where we care. You know, there is a lot of discussion about caring for the future, caring for the future you, caring for, you know, the generations that come. And examples of that, of how many have done things, you know, building famous things and beautiful things that take 100 years or 200 years to finish.
Yes.
And they knew that it's going to be there, but they are feeling that connectedness. And so we have to bring back that wholeness of life, not the dissected separation and all of that. There is a continuum in life which we can participate in.
I love that. I love that. And how does your work in consciousness and meditation shape the way you see Karen? And why do you believe it matters now in this moment of the world more than ever?
You know, consciousness is, as we discussed, has been discovered by my feelings to me. No, not me. I mean, consciousness is consciousness. And today, many, many scientists are trying to understand what consciousness is. Where does it come from? Is it just the product of a human brain, or is it the product of some kinds of brains? And consciousness is not, you know, universal. Yeah. It's something that is emerging from physicality. And there is the ancient studies of consciousness as being primary. For example, in what is called Vedanta or Advaita Vedanta.
Right.
And what is, you know, the Platonic Plato and Socrates and even, you know, great philosophers and thinkers like Spinoza and Schopenhauer and, you know, and many people today who are starting to believe, even scientists and great philosophers, that consciousness is a field and consciousness is primary.
Yes.
And so when you look at consciousness, you realize that there is nothing that we experience without consciousness.
Right.
Imagine, you know, you're in anesthesia, deep anesthesia. Mm-hmm. What does it matter if you are the most loved person or the most wealthy or the most knowledgeable or whatever?
Right.
Things don't exist for you. So life exists for us. Living exists for us. Living, loving, caring, appreciating, enjoying, having pleasure is through awareness, through consciousness. Without consciousness, nothing is there.
Right.
And so that is how study of consciousness made me realize and convinced personally, and that's why I wrote the previous book, Consciousness is All There Is, made me realize that it's a field of reality which interconnects everything in the universe. And that the definition of consciousness has to be modified from an anthropomorphic perspective, which means human-like invention or creation, because we see things from our own point of view.
Right.
So we can imagine that if anything is not conscious like we are, therefore they're not conscious at all.
Right.
And so, you know, a few years back, even not too far, people thought that animals didn't have any consciousness. So they are like, you know, machines or something like that. But now we realize, we know, we study it, we see they have, some animals have self-consciousness. They feel happiness and joy. They are expectations. They have connections. We know this. Anyone who has a pet or some, they know it's a living, loving, caring, also, you know, entity that is beautiful in many, many ways. And so consciousness expands, and it doesn't mean it's human-like. This is where the error comes.
Yeah.
If we like to say, okay, it's a consciousness like a human, then no, maybe it has similarities in the animal. But consciousness extends to even plants and trees. When they sense something, when the flower, sunflower turns towards the sun, it's not saying, I am a sunflower, I know I am here, I know my future, what it will be, and now I have to turn to the sun. It doesn't say any of that.
Right.
Of course, it's automatic, But it's detecting, it's sensing, it's feeling the sun,
yes.
and its body turns towards it. I am calling this a meager, minor level of consciousness also. So consciousness is on a spectrum from very little to higher and higher and higher. And even human beings, you can be dull, you can be drowsy, or you can be alert and relaxed and, you know, full of clarity and happiness and balance, and you act from that platform of wholeness. That's different than being drowsy and sleepy and narrow and afraid and struggling and in pain of things and all of that. That is narrower consciousness. Higher consciousness is also there, and one can expand one consciousness.
Right.
And that's also something I, you know, highlight in the new book, in the book The Power of Caring. And I generally suggest transcendental meditation because this is the one I'm most familiar with, but I tried many others which are very good for relaxing and helping, you know, some stress release.
Yes.
But to expand consciousness and have broad comprehension and act from that platform of wholeness,
yes,
I find transcending, which means to go beyond,
yes,
as most powerful.
I love that. Now, your book isn't just philosophy. It offers real practical tools people can use right away. And I'd love that for our listeners to walk away with something that they could hold on to. So for the person who feels stretched out, thin, that they're given too much, they're running on empty, what are some simple shifts or practices they can begin today to care more consciously?
First, find the inner ground. Don't be football of situations and circumstance, which means not everything that happens on the outside is going to shake you. You're not a football. You are a master. You can be a master of your destiny.
Yeah.
So you have to trust that. And from that platform, take the time to settle down, take the time to rest. And there are techniques for that.
Yes.
Again, I mentioned many times transcendental meditation, but in the book I give in each chapter what I call quick reset points.
Mm-hmm.
Even as simple as sitting, not rushing into something, closing the eyes, letting the shoulders go down.
Yes.
And make sure you are not, you know, holding a fist or you're not tense, because the body is kind of, when one is under pressure, the body also responds to that.
Right.
And the mind responds also to how the body is. So if you make a fist and make, you know, tense,
yeah,
your muscles, your mind will feel tense, and
right,
your mind will feel this. So by letting your shoulders down, relaxing your fist, relaxing your face, do some abdominal breathing, which also can be easy to learn, just making sure the breathing is settled like a child breathes.
Yes.
Take a few deep breaths and ask yourself a few questions, mm-hmm, like, you know, do I trust and I can do it? What is my mind to do? You know, what is discernment that I have to do today? What can I change consciously? And how can I sustain myself? Do I need more sleep? Do I need,
right,
to eat properly? Do I, you know, all the things that we advise everyone to do.
Yes.
And already this resets. Now, learning a technique that actually takes you beyond the surface value. Because we say the mind is like an ocean, active on its surface, like waves are there.
Yes.
And the deeper you go in the mind, the more settled it is.
Yes.
And transcending means to go beyond the surface waves into a settled inner state,
right,
and act from that settled state, which is the source of creativity, the source of intelligence from within. So these are a few things one can do, and I hope everyone would enjoy just these simple things without even having to agree with my worldview.
Right.
It's not necessary. The book stands on its own without the worldview of consciousness and, you know,
right,
transcending as a necessity.
I love that. Now, how do they start responding instead of reacting and bring a little bit more awareness to how they show up each day?
Again, I would say go back onto yourself, use the platform of your inner being, and know that, trust life. Trust that if you do something good and you don't get the result right away, don't think it's gone, it's finished, it's out, it has been useless. Every act ripples. and ripples out and the ripple comes back.
Right.
And so just be patient and be discerning. Don't waste your thing on something that is toxic or harmful. Of course, you have to be discerning. There is a logic. It's not like, just go and give yourself to everyone. You don't want to invite a wolf to your house and become their dinner,
Yeah. So
one has to balance also use one's intellect. We use more of our intelligence, our discernment, our decision-making when we are well settled within
yes.
ourselves. So don't make big decisions when you are tired, when you are stressed, when you are in fear.
Yes.
Wait until you are rested, you eat something balanced and healthy, take your time, take a few deep breaths, close the eyes, and then you're likely to make a better, this decision than when you are under pressure and feeling, the world is going to collapse or things are not going well and like that.
Right.
So much can happen from within. It's
yeah.
really amazing.
That is amazing. Now, you spent your life at the meeting point of science and consciousness and studying human potential at the very highest level. And you been distilled so much about how into like one profound, idea about caring. So when you strip it all back, what do you want people to most understand about caring, about themselves and about what becomes possible when they actually learn to care consciously?
First is that caring is wired within us. Naturally, we care about things. We care to preserve ourselves. There are simple things that we don't even have to think about that we care about. For
yes.
example, we care to breathe, we care to eat, we care to be happy, we care to... So these are our own personal caring things. And some of it is automatic, it's wired.
Yes.
You see a child who's dropping their ice cream cone, you react to it, it's natural. And therefore, you have to have discernment, knowing that caring is natural and knowing that it flows from within and trusting life.
Yes.
So as I said, trust, discernment, knowing that care can be coming from within and be effortless, and caring for oneself is not selfish.
Yes.
It's a necessity for caring for others
right.
in a sustainable way.
I love that. Now, right now, your book is on pre-launch. And can you tell everybody the name of the book and where they can find it and when it will be out?
Yeah, it's coming out this month in a couple of weeks. It's in pre-order now. I have it right here. And it's called The Power of Caring. And then the subtitle is Who Cares, Why It Matters, and How Conscious Caring Creates a Fulfilling and Connected Life. And it's in pre-order, but those who pre-order, we're offering webinars. The first webinar was Caring Across Divides, even Political Divides. The second webinar is about love, loss, and relationships, which are discussed in the book, but I did the webinar and answered questions, and they are recorded, so those who pre-order will get access to those. The next webinar coming in a few days is called Does the Universe Care? Because that's a question that I get often.
Yeah.
People have issues, they get things, children, a tree falls on somebody walking in a place, they get hurt.
Yeah.
Why? Who cares about it? Does the universe actually have orderliness or does it not?
Yes.
And so this will be the next webinar. And these are offered for those who support the book. We'd like it to be known, of course, because of its message at this time, which is, I feel, important.
I love it. Now, where can people find you?
I have a website. It's drtoninader.com, drtoninader.com. And there is, for the book, there is site also called The Power of Caring Book, thepowerofcaringbook.com, where you can pre-order, or if you like to order directly on Amazon or other, all Barnes and Noble, everybody who carries books, they have it now. And it should be there in less than a couple of weeks.
I love it. I love it. And for the listeners out there, it turns out Karen was never meant to empty us. And, done consciously with awareness and wisdom, it can become one of our most powerful sources of clarity, connection, and meaning that we have. And Dr. Tony Natta, has given us a profound and practical way to think about something that we do every single day. And today he reminded us all that when we learn about how to care better, we don't just change our own lives, we help change the world around us. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. Your knowledge is outstanding. The way you look at the world, the way you look at caring is so true. I think people don't, they don't stop and really think about what caring truly is. And it comes from the heart. It comes from within, like you were mentioning. It's wired in us. And if we can connect ourselves to that care, and we can let that care just come out to the surface and exemplify those emotions, that are in us. We could do so much good with it. And we could also use it properly, like you said, so we don't overwhelm ourselves, so we don't burn ourselves out. And, we can give the very best to ourselves, to the ones we love, to the people we care about, and to the world around us. And thank you so much for being able to make such a beautiful book to share with people on how to do that and how to go from the present moment to becoming the person that they truly were meant to be, their full potential, which has to do with their caring inside them in their heart. And I want to thank you so much for being here today. You are just a wonderful individual, and I thank you so much.
Thank you. Very kind of you. It's my great joy. All the best.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You too. You too. Bye.